new music from Hubert Murray, The Two Lives of Gabriel Foley in Athlone, and John B. Memories in Ballyuskal. Just some of what's to come tonight on Encore. And indeed, you are welcome to Encore, Midlands 103's dedicated arts show. And every Thursday night between 7 and 8, we bring you the best of what's happening in and around culture and the arts in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Encore at midlands103.com is the email address. I'd love to hear from you. And 083 3010 103 is the Lamb Brothers Midlands 103 text line if you want to drop me a line this evening. Tonight on the show, it is 50 years since Ballyuskal Drama Group performed Big Maggie, and tomorrow night, Billy, John and Joanne Kane will present certificates to the surviving cast members of their of John B. Keane's phenomenal play. Philip Shepherd will be telling us all about it. Athlone Little Theatre, as we speak, are gearing up to go on stage tonight. It's the second night of their run of The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley. And, of course, Athlone almost in the home, certainly in the county home, of the play's author, Jimmy Keary. The chair of the of Athlone Little Theatre is Joe McCarrick, and he will be bringing us the first night reports, how it all went last night. And Hubert Murray has brand new music. It's 2 years, a baby, a marriage and a lockdown or two since his last single and his last chat with us on Encore. Isn't that just gorgeous? It has a wonderful vibe about it. That is Hubert Murray's, his new song. It's called Arrow. There's a terrific story behind it as well, and he'll be telling us about that a little bit later on in the programme. But before that, we're going to come to another great story. A story of stories, if you like, because 2022 is the 50th anniversary of the Big Maggie performance by Ballyuskal Dramatic Group. And that is, it's a little place outside Ballinakil in County Laois. And they're celebrating this tomorrow night. And in order to do that, there will be a visit from Billy, John and Joanna Kane to present certificates to the 1972 cast members and their family. I think this is a wonderful story, and I'm joined on the line to talk about it by Philip Shepherd. Philip, you're welcome to Encore.
Claire, thank you so much. Lovely to be with you.
And you too. You're a little bit far away there. Let me see if I can turn you up a small bit. This is a terrific story. Tell me about that 1972 performance and what you know of it.
Well, what I know is I can actually remember it. I was at it in 1972, a local community group here, a local dramatic group, amateur drama group, produced one of John B. Keane's classic plays, Big Maggie, and it was a huge, huge success. And it's in the annals as part of the history of the community here, a little chapel district, as you say, rightly outside Ballinakil. We sort of straddle the border with Kilkenny and Laois, and of course the Tanna is a big part of it as well. It was a great occasion and hugely successful, and people still talk about it. And we're delighted that a good number of the cast are still alive and well with us, and a number have sadly passed away. But we're going to celebrate all of the cast members on that great production and part of our whole history. And we're looking forward to it so much. And we're extremely pleased. Sorry.
I was just about to say that history is a big part of what you do. And you were able to come across one of the original programmes. Tell us what it's like to hold that from 1972 in your hands, because of course drama in and dramatic societies all across those small towns of the Midlands had a very different role than they do now.
Indeed, and they're very much part of the fabric of the local communities, and there were powerhouses in lots of ways. You know, I remember reading, I think Micheál O'Hay, he was former director of the RTE drama. And he noted about 60 years ago, in the 1960s, there were 850 drama groups involving 10,000 people with a combined audience of a quarter of a million. I mean, that's absolutely phenomenal. But I remember a lot of this myself, and I think drama groups provided an outlet for a lot of people from different walks of life, and it sort of built sort of personal confidence with people, and I think that sort of was sort of these transferable skills, as we now call them. And I think those extended into sort of vibrant and commercial enterprises here.
Yeah.
And there. So I think it's a big story there, really.
Well, you were a young man and you got an opportunity to go to the theatre and to see live dramatic performances. I got to see that. But it's funny, I recently took a group of students to Kilkenny to see a Barnstorm Theatre Group did a performance of Philadelphia, Here I Come. And not one of the boys that I brought with me had ever seen a live theatrical performance before. Which to somebody like me who grew up in a community where there was lots of theatre is really surprising. But it's not surprising for today's young people, really, is it?
Well, I guess there's a lot of competition for people's time and attention. There's a lot of other sort of outlets as well. So there is a lot of competition. But I think the thing about sort of the whole amateur drama movement was the friendships that were built and people, it allowed them to develop and grow. And it was also a very daunting thing to get up there and it's in front of your neighbours and your friends and your relations. And they're the hardest critics you're ever going to have, you know. So the thing of not being a prophet in your own neighbourhood is very true. But it was great and they produced great things. But then we had very powerful playwrights, the likes of John B. Keane, who literally had his finger on the pulse of Ireland, particularly rural Ireland. And people understood that, you know, that literally transferred, I think, across. And I think, you know, somebody once noted that John B. Keane sort of challenged audiences with powerful plays, and I think he did size and the field, etc.
The big John B. Keane that I remember from when I was a good bit younger was P.J. Delaney starring as the Chastitute in Mac-Mellick Mockery. It was spectacular. I still... you have vivid memories of seeing him and those terribly sad last moments of the play. And I imagine that in the community in Ballyhale you have the same. There are people who remember Maggie and Big Maggie. And who played that role, do you remember?
I do indeed. Big Maggie was played by the late Mem Dunphy and she was absolutely excellent. And Mem was a great character in the local community. But it was just one of those things. It was 1972. It doesn't seem that long ago, but it's 50 years ago. And I think it's important to sort of people to know who we are, where we're coming from, and the people who make contributions. We all know about the kings and the queens and the presidents and the prime ministers. But the so-called ordinary people of Ireland, you know, they need a shout-out every now and again. And that's what we're going celebrating tomorrow night. And I think it's lovely to be able to do it. And we're also going to sort of present the families of those that have deceased with certificates as well, just to recognise their contribution to the community. And even though it's 50 years ago, it's not forgotten. And it becomes part of the fabric of who we are.
It does indeed, doesn't it? Do you have your programme in front of you?
I do indeed.
Well, maybe the first thing to do to recall all of those people, because there's not an enormous cast,
no,
sorry, 10 or 12 parts in it. Would you call out those names and we'll remember them now?
So, Mem Dunphy, Con Phelan, Lizzie Singleton, Kathleen O'Rourke, Nicky Mullally, Michael Brophy, Henry Mooney, Michael Brannigan, Mary O'Rourke, and Mrs. Kathleen Brennan. And of course, the music was provided by violin on the night by Michael Phelan. And not forgetting the director and the person who drove it and made it all happen and motivated everybody was the late Father Joe Galvin, who was the curate out here in the Chapel District of Ballyhale. And we will be remembering him tomorrow evening. We'll present Father Eamon O'Gorman, our very distinguished and popular parish priest here, and he's actually going to play some music here. He's a very accomplished musician, and we're looking forward to that as well. Yeah.
So there will be certificates provided, and they will be presented by members of John B. Keane's family. Tell us about that and your connection with them.
Well, we're absolutely delighted that the Keanes are coming up. Billy is coming up, and Joanna from the Stole. And John, their brother, has been a journalist with the Kilkenny people for years. He's a lot of connections locally here. But Billy Keane, people will know him as a columnist every Saturday with the Irish Independent. And, of course, he's also on with Dahi Amora with you in the local provincial newspapers. And he's a distinguished author in his own right and a big driver of the Soul Writers Week, etc. And Billy's going to sort of talk about growing up in the Keane household. And I'm delighted to say that admission is free. This is going to be a wonderful evening. They're going to present the certificates to everybody. And Edward Hayden of KCLR who does a one-man sort of show of John B. Keane's works. He's going to do some readings from John B. Keane. It's going to be a very, very special evening. And like I said, it's going to mark people and sort of honour people who have given so much to the community in the past, not just in drama, but in many other ways.
I think that's it's wonderful to have the family there, but also wonderful to have a sense of John B's voice coming through in the performance from Edward Hayden, because, you know, if you ever listen to the archives, I'm sure you do, you hear how entertaining a man he was and how full of stories. So to have the sense of his presence there, but also his children telling the stories from being at that fireside, from being in that pub, from hearing the people coming in and out, and the chat that we all know went on till all hours, that will be extraordinary.
Indeed, yeah. Billy tells the story of growing up in the pub. He said that there were kind of free range children that were in and out of the place. They're meeting the characters and meeting the people and whatever. And I think that's really going to add to the whole thing. Yeah, it's like an inside track on it. They talk about their dad sort of up in the room, up over the hall door, looking down the square. And that's where he got all his characters from, and the spakes and the stories and whatever. And indeed, John B. Keane was brought up with his grandparents out in a place called Lara Compawn. And that's where Dan Paddy Andy Sullivan lived, and he was the matchmaker there at the time, and ran a sort of a dance hall during Lent when the bishops disapproved of it, and he got all these stories from there. We are really excited. We're very, very pleased and delighted that the Keens are taking the time and the trouble to come up. But that's what they're like, you know. They're more concerned about sort of rural Ireland, and they recognise the importance of it and how people appreciate their father had literally his finger on the pulse of rural society and what was going on. And he was way ahead of a lot of other people back in the 50s and 60s.
And I should ask you before we finish up, I know some of the cast members are still alive and will be receiving their certificates. What are their memories of that performance and that time in the amateur dramatic scene?
I mean, there's nothing but excitement, you know. I mean, they've built very strong sort of personal relationships, there was a sort of a sense of belonging with the whole thing that has literally lasted 50 years. They were the people that were in the play. They were out there. And that translated as well afterwards. When the group sort of fell away a number of years ago, some of them sort of moved to Dura. There was a White Lady drama group in Dura, and they joined there. Mm. And newer members came on from Ballyoskler, Noel Cummins, Mikey Felix, guys like that. And there were performances in Dura of Big Maggie, indeed, that I remember as well, in Size. And there's a great actress in Dura in Faulty's Pub, Michael Gahan's daughter there, Sarah Gahan, is absolutely first class and wonderful actress. I'd love to see her back again on the stage. But I think it was a great, great time, and hopefully that still lies there with people as well. You know, but there is a great tradition of drama locally going right back. The woman that played on the night that played Big Maggie, Mem Dunphy, her father, Kennedy was his name. He was a leading amateur drama actor in the 1920s. I do know that. Indeed, my own father acted in a play in Dura by Charles Kickham called Knock Na Gow, and used to tell great stories. But there was a bonding of the people that were involved in the cast. They went through it. It was sort of a baptism of fire. It was a crucible, and they came out the other end. And there's a sense of belonging and friendship that lasted literally throughout their entire lives. It's wonderful to see.
It is, for sure. And another tiny little quirky thing is, of course, that Arthur Lappin, who produced the field of the film, is living in Abbeyleix. So it's circles within circles.
Well, they're more than circles within circles. His wife there, Kate Lennon, they actually met on the set of The Field when it was filmed up in Leinan. And she said she's very grateful to John B. Keane for a very happy life thereafter. Okay. So, yeah, it's a great, 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 great story.
It is indeed. So this is happening at 9 o'clock tomorrow night in the Wheel Inn.
The Wheel Inn, and I want to thank, while Shepherd's, our auction house, and our sponsor, this, Frank Brennan is hosting the event. He's providing food, and he's organized a disc jockey there, and he's really, really doing a great, great, great effort into it. And it's going to be a great, great night, and it's going to be a memorable night, and people are going to be talking about this for years to come. The Keens are great. Billy talking about growing up in the Keen household, that's such fun. And they're just, and they're very generous with their time and everything. They're just nice people, and it's going to be, as I said, it's going to be a great, great evening. And I want to thank Frank Brennan for hosting the whole thing, and his pub, which, by the way, is a great community centre, and it's one of the last.
In Ballyuskill.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah.
It's Ballyuskill's Wheel Inn. There are others around, but this is the Wheel Inn in
Ballyuskill. This is the real one.
This is the real one. Philip, thanks a million for talking to us this evening.
Clear.
I hope you have a wonderful evening tomorrow night.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure's been all mine. Thanks a million. That is Philip Shepherd, and that sounds like just a proper, wonderful community event. And of course, if you're interested in John B. and in the stories of John B. and his family, you can head along tonight at 9 o'clock to the Wheel Inn in Ballyuskill tomorrow night. You're listening to Encore on Midlands 103 083 3010 103, the Lamb Brothers Midlands 103 text line, and Encore at Midlands103.com if you'd like to get in touch. Still to come on the programme, I will be chatting to Hubert Murray. Well, I was chatting to him quite a bit earlier on today, and he was telling me about that wonderful song, his new release, that we heard at the top of the programme. But taking us to that is the wonderful Joe McCarrick, who is not, Joe, you're welcome to the programme, not the chairman of Athlone Little Theatre. I knew as soon as I had said that wasn't true. I was, had you in my mind as the former chair of the All-Ireland Drama Festival, and we will give the credit to Chrissy Killian as chair of Athlone Little Theatre. You are...
Well, thank you for the promotion there, anyway. But yeah, Chrissy is doing a mighty job,
of course.
Yeah.
But you are directing The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley. Tell me about opening night last night. How did it go?
Well, opening night was, it's always a nerve-tingling night because we've done everything we've done in rehearsal and we bring it up to a certain point and then we just have it ready for off. And we had a fabulous night. We had a full house last night, a very receptive audience. They really, really got behind the cast, behind the plot of the play. They got all the laughs, they got all the punchlines, and they got all the woos and the ha-has. And they gave us a rapturous applause at the end of the night, and it was just buzzing, absolutely buzzing. I was thrilled. The cast and the company did a fabulous job, and it was great to get the first night out of the way.
It's a great play for those wintry nights coming up to Christmas, isn't it?
Oh, it's an absolute dream. And I had never, I'd heard of the play, I had never seen it before, and I came across it because a company that I knew, the people involved in a company down there, Ockham, County Galway, had done one of Jimmy Keary's plays, not this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I rang Jimmy. They told me, well, ring Jimmy, he's very approachable. And Jimmy suggested I do this play. He said it was his most popular play. And when I read it, I just fell over the place laughing, just reading it. And it was certainly very well advised by Jimmy for us to do it. He sent me the script online. I called a casting night, and we had a great turnout for that, and cast the play. And I have to say, the company are well suited to their roles, shall we say. They're hand in glove into their characters, and they've put a lot of work into it. So it's paid dividends now. Yeah.
Yeah. From your point of view, then, not having seen it, and then coming to direct it, what was that like for you? How did it? Where do you begin with that?
Yeah, well, obviously you read the play, but you read it several times, and as you're reading it, you begin to form a picture in your own mind. Now, I know other amateur groups would have done these plays before, and there is a temptation possibly to look up YouTube to sort of see what other people do, but I would never do that, or I'd never even encourage my actors to do that, because I think when you approach a play, it has to be organic and it has to be individual and it has to be, you know, unique. Mm-hmm. And in terms of reading it, I suppose you get the drift of the story, you get what the playwright is trying to do, you get the punch lines and the comic lines, and you begin, as I said, to build a picture. When you've got the cast on the stage, the actors themselves, I mean, I try and encourage actors to become the characters themselves by imagining their lives before and after the action of the play, so that they can get into the skin of the character. And they themselves then, by their own interreactions and by their own facial expressions and movements and so on, develop the story further, and that adds to the whole productive nature of the play. So it, it's a very collaborative, as theatre is, piece of work, and everybody gets involved, everybody brings their own tune. So I would never tell an actor what to do, unless it's a brand newcomer or somebody that just doesn't know. But it's better if it comes from themselves, and in the main, it does. It's sort of like being the conductor of an orchestra. Yeah. Each of the individual musicians know their instruments and they know what to do and how to play, but the conductor just brings it all together. And I suppose that's what a director does, mainly.
It's funny, that's exactly what A.C. Rochford said about producing, about directing The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley in Mount Melick earlier on this year.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing she said. But she also said that Jimmy had spoken to them, had come down to one of the rehearsals. And I know he hasn't been at one of your rehearsals, but he is going to come along and see the performance.
He's going to come one of the nights. I know which night he's coming, and I'm not going to say it here on air.
No, I can't.
And they will, hopefully he'll stay behind and meet the cast, and hopefully he'll be happy with what we've done with it. I would be what I might, in a very sort of a lofty expression, to say that I'm a more naturalist in terms of production. I like people to be themselves, to be the characters in a naturalist and sort of a realist sort of a way. There is moments of farce in the play, which I have interspersed, but not overall, if you know what I mean. Because I'm playing for the comedy and for there's very comic, very funny lines in this play. It's a very well crafted play from Jimmy Keary's point of view. And there are some set pieces in it. Fainting and carrying of bodies around the place, which is great too. But there's such wonderful comedy in the lines, and the way they're delivered it just adds to the whole piece of it. Yeah.
Well, you have a minute to sell it to us, Joe, because you have a couple of more nights to go. You're continuing on until.
We're on stage. Well, officially, we started off last night from the 23rd to the 30th of November. We've had phenomenal bookings pre-opening night. The booking is on at lonelittletheatre.ie, that website, or on eventbrite.ie. Either of those platforms will get you to a booking site. And we are mainly booked out for the weekend. We have some seats available on Monday and Wednesday, but because of demand, we are actually going to go on the Thursday night. Adding an extra night on the 1st of December. So this, please come and see the play if you haven't booked already. Get on the website and get your seat, because this is a very, very heartwarming comedy, the perfect antidote to all of the doom and gloom that's in the air these days, and it's the ideal way to file a few couple of hours to come in from the cold and just to get a break away from the hours, just sit back and enjoy and relax. And there's nothing complicated in it. You don't have to work anything out. It just all happens before your eyes, and it's a good hearty laugh.
Well, there you go. Can't say fairer than that. Joe McCarrick, thank you so much for talking to us about the
Thanks very much.
You're most welcome. That is the two loves of Gabriel Foley that are playing until this night next week at Athlone Little Theatre, and you get all the details there on their website. Oh, we love an exclusive on Encore, and that is an exclusive. That is the first play of a brand new song by Hubert Murray, which will be released tomorrow on all the various different platforms. I was chatting to Hubert earlier on today and asked him, first of all, to tell me about that song. Hubert, tell us about Arrow.
Hi, Claire. Thanks very much for having me. So Arrow is a song that's inspired by a poem by an American poet called Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He's a 19th century poet that wrote a song called The Arrow and the Song. And basically, I had the words of the poem in front of me, and I was trying to put a melody to the words, and it's kind of a different way of writing. I hadn't really done that before, you know, and it was one of these magical moments when you just had a full, complete melody just come out in one, which is something that doesn't really happen to me, putting it simply. And so it was a really enjoyable moment to be able to just have that, a melody like that. And the song is the words are basically about when you let a song or let a piece of art loose into the world, and you wonder where it'll end up, and you kind of wonder who will listen to it and how it'll be interpreted. And I suppose there's a sense of mystery and fear about releasing a new piece of art into the world, much like how you can shoot an arrow, shooting it aimlessly into the heavens, you know. And so that's kind of the meaning behind, or at least my interpretation of the poem and the words of it, you know. And
yeah.
So it's basically just me on my own playing guitar. We recorded it down in. I was lucky enough to get a little bit of support from the county from the Offaly Arts Office, and so it meant that I was able to work with a lot of local people. So we recorded in Clara, in the Nutshell Recording Studios with Joe Egan. And we got Declan Dooley, who's a fantastic videographer from Killy. And he was a fly on the wall for the whole recording process. And then we got Claire Guinan, then a fantastic local artist, to do the artwork for it. You know, she literally just... like that, it just seems to flow out of her like a sort of a dream as well. She just seems to, you to give her an idea, and she just comes back to you with an idea instantly. It's incredible, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was really great. It was great to be able to work with all these local artists, you know, local people. So it was super.
Well, come back to the process there, because that idea that you. It's almost like you call out to the gods for a tune, and the tune arrives fully formed. I'm fascinated by that. How long does that happen? Set the scene for us. How does something like that take place?
You spend a long time looking out the window and nothing happening. And you will play, a lot of the time I play the guitar, or I will just pick out notes, totally random notes on the guitar, and the words of the song, or the words in it that you have in front of you, will kind of, I don't know how to say it. It kind of brings out the word might entice an emotion, might entice a sort of a starting point. You know what I mean? And so you just either just hum in my sort of whatever natural tone is coming to me at that stage. So I'll just hum a note, and if it's sort of lucky enough to have a melody that will just come to you, you're like da 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 da, and you're like, all right, where could that go, you know? And sometimes it can be a real struggle. You do one bit, and then you get to the next line, and you're like, God Almighty, this will never end. And you try and embellish small little bits of the melody that you've just done. So you're like da 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 da, and then you get to the next line, and you'll try and embellish a little bit. You'll try and change some part of the melody, and just keep doing that little process. And then you try and pick the strong part of the song or the song, the words that seem to sum up the feeling the most. You try and work your way into a chorus for that section. Well, that's at least how I do it, anyways. And it was just that sort of nice, very nice moment when it just seemed to flow out very, very easily. And you're rushing for hoping that there's battery in your phone that you can record it quickly.
and that's how it works, is it?
For me, generally, yeah. You sit down a lot. You look at the wall. You look out the window, and you just play the guitar. Whatever words you've written will kind of be a starting point for where you're going to go with it, whether it's going to be fast or slow, and where it is within the tone of your voice, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I started about it. But I must say it was it's not really happened to me before. I just write something that quickly, you know. Normally it can take days, months, years.
And are you a poetry fan, or how did you come across Longfellow?
It was through a writers group that we were doing a songwriters group during lockdown with a guy called he's a great musician called Fiac Moriarty, who's a great singer songwriter as well, and he basically said you need to try and write a melody. And force yourself to try and write something in a different fashion to how you would normally do it. And so he had a couple of ideas, and then this poem, The Arrow, came along, and that's how it came along. So I wasn't really familiar. I wasn't familiar with Henry Wadsworth Longfellow before, you know, so that's kind of how I got into it, you know.
Yeah, well, he was very popular for a while in his day, and then became a bit of an acquired taste afterwards.
Yeah, The Arrow in the song is such a. I feel it's a very accessible poem, very, very accessible poem, and it's just really. Beautiful imagery that he has in it, you know.
Yeah.
And it was really lovely to be introduced to it, you know.
I think it's 2 years, I think, since you were on the program with Heaven Cried. That was the last big release, I think, was it?
It's been 2 years, a baby, and a marriage later.
Ah, right. Well, there
is a pandemic.
And a pandemic. Well, you've had your hands full. And do babies and weddings and pandemics, do they inspire, or do they, you know, do the muses kind of say, oh, you know, we'll come back when you've a bit more time on your hands?
No, do you know, I was wondering, actually, would you ask something like that, actually, because it's very... being locked down in a room is very, very conducive to writing.
Is it?
For me, anyways. Mm. And so I was trying to put myself into situations where I had to completely lock myself off from the outside world, you know. And during over the last 2 years, although it's been a bit busy, that sort of isolation... being away from sort of or having people, having the sort of space, I suppose, to be able to just be in a room and being locked down is actually very, very conducive to writing for me, you know. Last year I got COVID, and so I was locked down in the room for 10 days, and I wrote about maybe 5-6 songs, and it was just this. It was the real sort of the limitation of not being able to get out, the limitation of not being allowed to go anywhere, that you had to sit down and just write a song and finish it. And it became your sort of main thing that you did, you know. And it was actually really good for getting material out, you know.
And would that encourage you then in the long term maybe to think about, you know, maybe I need to take a week's retreat, so to speak, a creative retreat, to be able to write well?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Before, I was very much the mindset of sitting in and around work, sitting in and around, literally, you know, getting up early, doing an hour at it, you come home in the evening, do an hour at it, And I'm a big believer in sort of practice like that, in terms of putting small bits of time just into writing. Pat Patterson is a great songwriter from America, and he's got a lovely book on writing lyrics. And so he has a little exercise of object writing. So you picked an object, and in your whatever object is around you, and you have to create a sort of sense-bound 10-minute writing. You try and get about 200 words out about that object, and you just bring it to life, you know. And so I use that as a practice mechanism all the time, just to be constantly sort of like sitting down writing. But in terms of getting a full bulk of workout, I found that I'd definitely be trying to get away again for 5 days to a week of just totally isolated, you know, because it was really the most productive I've ever been in terms of writing, you know.
Okay, well, you get to show this off tomorrow. Tell us about the launch.
So the launch is basically going to be a streaming launch on iTunes and Spotify. And so it's been launched, it'll be tonight at midnight. The song will go live on Spotify and iTunes and all other streaming platforms. And that is basically it. Just posting about it. And I have no gigs coming up at the moment. We're kind of in the pipeline for 2023.
Mm.
And another release in February 2023 as well. So we'll be aiming at that, you know.
Yeah.
But you can find it on Hubert Murray YouTube, Hubert Murray Music on YouTube, Hubert Murray Music on Facebook, Hubert Murray Music on Instagram, and Hubert Murray on Spotify and iTunes. That's the best way of doing it, you know.
And that is indeed the best way of doing it. And that would be great news to the person who texted and said they love the song already. So thank you for that. And that is it from me. The gentleman of country music, John Hogan, is in the Country Road seat after the news at 8 o'clock. I'll be back this time next week, and we'll look forward, as always, to the pleasure of your company. Till then, take care of yourself. Good night.